Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. Happy Halloween. I'm seeing, you know, the disadvantage of radio is we can't see you. So send us the pictures of how you and your office is dressed up. Love to get it. I wish we could share it with everybody. But it's good to have you on the program with us. Thank you so much for tuning in and dialing in on what's going on. This week we're going to be talking about all things mortgage. I'm kind of borrowing the NPR phrase out there, but we're going to talk all things mortgage. Talk about all the current events that's going on. And it's just the four of us, Andy, Shell, Alice Alvey, Joe Farr, and myself. We're just going to go around and talk about the things that we think are the most critical issues that you need to be considering. Many of you write us and tell us how much you value it. When we just get together, it's just us. We appreciate you tuning in and listening each and every week. But let's start off by going, as we do each week, to Joe Farr to find out what's going on in interest rates. Joe, good to have you with us again. What is going on in the world of rates?
Well, everyone should know that interest rates are down. Mortgage-backed security prices are up. We're up over half a point so far today, almost three-quarters of a point today. Same thing that's driven those higher, MBS prices higher, has driven the stock market lower. It's down, Dow's down 180 points. And it's back to Europe, amazingly.
We thought
we got things cleared away on Wednesday when they made their big announcement. But this weekend, or over the weekend, I guess there's been some concern, growing concern about Italy. This morning, Italy's debt, they issued debt, and they had to offer a much greater yield in order to get people to buy it. That was a big negative to the markets this morning, given how significantly larger Italy is relative to Greece and Ireland and Portugal. So there's a growing concern again in Europe about the sufficiency of the EFTF or whatever that is,
yep,
the
EFTF,
fund that they
yep.
put together, and yep. You know, the bank capitalization. So good for mortgages, but not so good for stocks.
Yeah, possibly not so good for the overall the future of just the economy in general. So yeah, that's bad news, but good news right now. So keep it rolling. All right, let's talk about what's happening. Anything else? Let's see. There's a number of things that you have down here related to this week and what's going on specifically today.
Well, today, you know, this morning, one of the trading firms from the bond floor, MF Global, had to file bankruptcy. And any time somebody who's making markets and taking sides of trades goes out of the business, much like I don't want to say like Lehman when they went out, but they were in similar positions to Lehman, but on a much smaller scale. It does concern the market for who might be holding the other sides of those trades and how do you unwind them. So that's a bit of a concern this morning. And then Chicago PMI came in a little lower than expected, so that was good for bonds.
Yeah, I noticed that. That was interesting. All right, last week, let's cover a little bit of that.
Boy, that was crazy last week, wasn't it?
Wild week.
We saw big swings, both you know, the first couple of days of the week. Tuesday was a big plus day for MBS prices. The concern in Europe and whether or not they'd get together, their plan, their summit meeting announcement was delayed a day, and that spooked the market on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But then on Wednesday, when they actually did make their announcement, investors were pretty comforted by that. We saw a big drop in prices after that, because what had led up to that summit announcement was a lot of fear trading, you know, people getting out of stocks and into safer assets like bonds. And after the announcement, they reversed that concern, that fear trade, and sold off the risk-free assets or the less risky assets to buy into the more risky assets, including stocks. Mm. And we saw a big rally in the stock market. but we saw the prices that had improved on Tuesday fell. They improved Tuesday about half a point. They fell a point on Wednesday and then again on Thursday, but then we saw MBS prices rise back up on Friday. So it was quite a roller coaster. In the end, there was very little movement in prices given the big daily changes. Last week, the economic events that came out during the week were really pretty, as you said, neutral. They're pretty neutral for the market. The economic environment right now is conducive to supporting low rates. We got slow growth and we have low inflation. The growth measure for the third quarter, 2.5% GDP, is certainly better than it has been in the last few quarters, but not fast enough to be a big concern. Core PCE came out at a 1.6% annual rate rise in prices, which was very comforting. And then, Dave, this week we have really some pretty significant events. We have the ISM coming out tomorrow at 10. But the biggest, well, two big things. Wednesday, the Fed meeting is going to conclude, and at 10:30, they're going to read the statement, and then at 2:15, Chairman Bernanke is going to be doing one of his quarterly press conferences following the meeting. So we'll have a couple hours of the Fed chairman speaking about what they considered and what they did, and that has really been a market mover of late. Friday, the jobs report comes out. Nothing's bigger than that. Expectations are for 90,000 jobs to have been created, which is down a little bit from what the announcement was last month, but still slow, but positive. And big misses there always cause big reactions in the bond market.
One of our listeners just sent me a note, says, what does the ISM stand for? What are those initials
That's
for
the
you?
Institute of Supply Management.
Supply Management.
Yeah, and it's a measure of activity, manufacturing activity on a national basis. You see a lot of, you see Chicago PMI, you see the New York Index, Empire State Index. Those are more regionalized. The ISM is a much broader measure, which gives it a little more prominence in the investor community.
Well, it's interesting to see all the various indicators that are driving the market, but it really comes back to what's happening in Europe. I mean, that is just, without question, it's trumping everything. I guess Greenspan, that's going back to the history. Bernanke's comments, his Fed speak, so to speak, could have some interesting insights to his attitude and where he's going with it. But that's pretty orchestrated as well. There's not a lot of new information comes out of that, would you say?
Well, you know, they can do things like this last time they said that they were going to begin again to invest in mortgage-backed securities, which was specific to our industry and specific to the demand side of what was selling. And so it was helpful. It'll be interesting this time to see if they position themselves to participate in what gets produced under the refi plan when it starts working. And I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but. So, you know, they can do so. They can do a lot, and they can affect interest rates by a lot. And so everyone will pay a lot of attention to them.
It will be something that will be deeply watched. Thank you so much, Joe, for bringing us an update on what's going on across the globe and how it's affecting us. Updates up and down, around through. Net neutral last week, and let's see what this week has for us. Thank you so much, Joe, for bringing us an update. You're going to want to stay tuned, folks. We're going to be talking about a lot of these, a lot of what's happening in the markets. Joe talked about the refinance, talking about what Garrett's talking about, new news items breaking as we talk. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. And there is so much going on. Alice Alvey is about ready to bring us an update on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, what is proposed. And we'll be talking more about that in the program. But, Alice, good to have you on the program with us. And what's going on in the world of the legislative, the legislative update, but we also refer to it as a legislative highway, all the traffic going down that. How congested is it today?
I'm feeling very congested, Dave, mostly because I have paper all over my desk right now. But the whole, trying to resurfacing over the weekend of Senator Garrett unveiling additional proposals to reform secondary market, and that's been all over the news. And, you know, I'm going to give everybody a little hint here. There are a lot of news aggregators out there. And then, of course, you try and go to their website, and they want you to subscribe to their stuff before you can finish reading the article. And all you wanted to do was read the article and find the legislation yourself, and you can't get there from wherever you started. It really is what I do is I go to that senator's website and pull up, you know, their access. Walters Kluwer's is another link where they're pretty good at actually giving you access to the information itself without saying you have to sign up for lots of money for a new subscription each year. So they do. If you go to Garrett's website, you can pull up the information about the proposal that they're going to be taking to committee over the next, depending on what date, maybe this week or next week, to really talk about what is the destination for the secondary market. If you recall, at a couple of other shows, we've brought up the different groups of bills that have presented. There was a group back in about March. There was another group of bills presented in May. And each one of these attacks different angles for what to do with the old Fannie Freddie and how to set up this new entity. So we are going to talk about this. I think we're going to stretch out on this topic a little bit later in our next segment. So what I want to give the listeners today is, I wanted to give you that, ability to try and find some of this yourself. But understand that this is starting to consolidate. It is starting to get more movement and attention. So they're looking at Garrett's proposal breaks things down into two different groups to facilitate continued standardization and uniformity of mortgage securitization. So there's that bucket, the idea of the actual securities themselves. And one of the first bullet items here is direct FEFA to create several categories of mortgages with uniform underwriting standards for each. And, of course, one of everybody's favorite bullets in this first section is to abolish risk retention provisions in Dodd-Frank. Woo! Okay, but yeah, I just have to, settle down. There's 15 additional bullets, and there's a lot of questions and all that.
One bullet giveth, another bullet taketh away.
Right. So, the idea of creating that FHFA, essentially, Federal Housing Finance Administration, would be the central figure for this. We would have set products that they manage with standard underwriting criteria, basically starting over and throwing out the risk retention provisions under Dodd-Frank. And I would assume QM kind of goes with that.
I'm not a
Wall Street insider, but those two have gone together. Then you get into ensuring the rule of law and legal certainty, so removing conflicts of interest, clarify rules of eligibility for second lien mortgages. They're even proposing setting up mandatory arbitration on disagreements between investors and issuers on reps and warranties, standardized servicer accounting, allow for appointment of an independent third party to act for the benefit of the investors in the MBS. So lots of bullet points here where, again, we're going to talk about that in much more detail as we get into the second half of the program here. This proposal is also trying to provide additional transparency and disclosure And really kind of increasing the quality of the loan level information that's going to be within each of the securities. So to date, we've got all of the bills that have run through. There have been about 15 bills presented with Fannie and Freddie, and now it's starting to kind of consolidate and get itself rearranged where we'll have something a little more specific that we're trying to follow, at least as of now. I mean, you all know how this stuff goes. Next week, you know, it could all be right, just like Greece. It's okay, it's not okay, so... anyway, that's the scoop on the Garrett secondary market proposals. Secondly, there is a group of bills that moved their way to subcommittee to be discussed. And in those is this Short Sale Transparency Act. It's House Bill 3164. And the idea of trying to require Fannie and Freddie to disclose the minimum purchase price that they would accept on the short sale of a residence, you know, the idea that they might publish right. that in advance, that just doesn't sound realistic to me. That's, it sounds like they would take away all the negotiation. There's so many numbers that go on with the concept of negotiating a short sale. So, but that's got that moved a little further along. Certainly it's moving along to try and get FHA and FIFA loan limits back up. That is certainly still trying to move its way through committee. And then, I think a lot of you are on board with the idea of an FDIC act to prohibit depository institutions from charging consumers fees for use of debit cards. That's House Bill 3190. So a few bills trying to make their way, at least getting another step closer. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about HARP again in our next segment and some other programs. So just stay tuned for that. But right now, the biggest issue is trying to see where the bills are going to go for Fannie and Freddie, and we'll keep watching that for you.
We will keep watching it closely, and there's certainly a lot going on. Again, listeners, we are going to be talking about both the Garrett proposal and the Hot Topics segment, and then also the HARP. So we'll get into that discussion a lot more. Alice, thank you so much for staying on top of all this, as you do each and every week. And thank you to your staff. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. We talk to the profit doctor. He fixes what ails your bottom line like any good doctor would. He fixes what ails you. And there's a lot of things ailing some folks out there, and one of them is misrepresentation. Dr. Shell, also known as Profit Doctor, good to have you on with us again. What do you have for us this week?
Hey, Dave. Thanks. Well, it's always great to be on the show. And, you know, I just happened to noticing the notes from the producer, and it looks like the show's going a little bit fast, so... Alice and Joe did take up their a lot of time, which means that instead of going just, you know, 6 minutes, I get to go for 15 minutes. Just think about everybody's eyes rolling back in their head, having to listen about accounting for 15
Wait
minutes.
Wait a minute, maybe I'm going to jump back in again then. No.
I'm kidding. I wouldn't do that. We need more time for our roundtable conversation.
Yeah, this is going to give us more time for that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway...
Anyway, misrepresentations. And, you know, the title of this segment is The Details, The Wolf, and the Sheep. The Details,
okay.
The Wolf, and the Sheep. And again,
okay.
It'll tie together, Dave. You know, here we go.
So, you to pull this together. Okay. So how does that all relate to misrepresentations?
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing about misrepresentations is that don't be surprised because something is not what you expect. This happens all the time. It happens a lot. I was dealing with a client earlier today who had a surprise because something wasn't what they were expecting. And a common story of deception, it's not good, but a common story of deception is the wolf in sheep's clothing. And this wolf, you know, wearing sheep's clothing, invades the flock of sheep. And because it looks like a sheep, it's not identified by the shepherd, and it's able to kill and devour unsuspecting little lambs, you know. And So this actually is a reference to biblical origins, and it's been in Aesop's fable, and you see it in cartoons all the time. And we all need to be warned, we all need to be aware of, about being deceived. We want to be warned about don't be deceived, don't be confused by this. And yet, it happens all the time. So the wolf in sheep's clothing is common in history. Even the Trojan horse is an example of the same thing. But the point of all this is there's danger below the surface. Things that appear to be right are often wrong, and we see this over and over. And things that look good on the surface may actually be bad. So inside the details is really where you find out the real core of what something is, whether if it's a person or if it's details in finance. And so inside the details is something bad, something that we did not expect, or even something that can kill us, like a wolf eating a sheep. So it's always important to look deeper when you're looking at a report or looking at a person or looking at financial statements. So sometimes there's a wolf in sheep's clothing hiding in your financial statements. So now in mortgage banking, we are all about to see the wolf in sheep's clothing inside the NMLS calling for a financial condition.
Very, very clever. Yes, and it's so true.
So this wolf in sheep's clothing will devour your company, and it could cause you to lose your state license, your HUD approval. The wolf in this example is filing inaccurate financial reports with your regulators. And when I refer to regulators, I mean including your State Department, State Licensing Department, the Federal Department of Labor, the State Department of Labor, and the IRS. All these agencies can access your report, your NMLS report, and there is documentation that they will be looking at. And this is going to be in the MCR, the Mortgage Call Report, the FC, the Financial Condition section, filed by mortgage banks. Now, I was reading in the literature from the AICPA just recently.
What's the AICP?
The American Institute of Certified Public Accountants.
All right, good. Yeah. These initials, got to keep everyone up on it.
Yeah, all of the CPA, the CPA group, the trade group for the CPAs, has mentioned that.
Exciting,
IRS,
dynamic group, I'm sure.
A very dynamic group that specializes in polishing doorknobs. The ICPA, don't even go there, right? The ICP has mentioned that the IRS is adding staff to review mortgage banks' NMLS reports to determine employee classification. So are your LOs being paid overtime? Are you capturing timesheets and all that stuff, along with general reporting accuracy? So the IRS is going to be looking at mortgage banks' NMLS reports to determine if they're accurate. So it's not just your State Department. You also have the IRS coming in looking at this stuff. And the NMLS information, if it's correct, then everybody's fine, everything's good. But if the NMLS information is not correct, then a number of bad things can happen. Knowingly filing a false report, purposely providing the government with false data, you know what they call that? That's called fraud. That's a bad one.
Not a good outcome.
And misrepresented financial data where you make a mistake in filing, it's considered an unfiled report, so you'll get the same consequences if the report wasn't filed at all. So regulatory reporting is expected to be accurate. That's why they ask for the information. You're supposed to give them what they ask for. And as an example, the line on the call report that asks for loan originator salary must be supported with specific compensation detail. And when the line says interim interest, it must be supported by the amount of interest collected from each customer at closing. It can't be estimated. It must be supported by actual detail listing from each loan. Now, people may think, well, I can just estimate it. The CPAs estimate all the time. Well, guessing. GAAP allows for estimates because CPAs, when they audit books, they don't look at every transaction. They basically come in and the CPAs and express an opinion about the financial statements that they're not materially misstated. They never say that the financials are accurate. For regulatory reporting, that is not good enough. You can't use estimates for regulatory reporting. It must be supported with accurate details. So that means for every line on the call report, each mortgage company must have specific details that ties back to loan-level activity and financial events. So all this is easily captured in the accounting system if you use loan-level accounting. I've got a new acronym, Dave. Acronym Loan-Level Accounting, LLA.
Okay, good.
Pretty simple. So with
LLA. Be just
LLA,
like a CPA to introduce another acronym.
Yeah, well, we need more. with LLA, you'll also know now, because you're doing loan-level accounting, you'll know your profit by branch, profit by loan originator, profit by product, and you'll know if your gain on sale is correct, because with LLA, you will not only know all this really important information to run your business, but also your mortgage call report financial condition section will be accurate. And the only way you'll know this is to have your loan-level accounting implemented. Now, we have clients using Accounting for Mortgage Bankers, using QuickBooks, using Peachtree, using Great Plains, a bunch of other accounting systems. The issue is not as much the accounting system, but the procedures used to capture the loan details. That's really where the problem is. Now, as an example, the closing department has the final HUD 1. Well, accounting needs that to record the entries. The funding department knows how much loan borrowing was done from the warehouse bank for the funding. So they've got that information, and secondary marketing has an expected gain on sale. So they've got that information. So with that information, accounting has what they need to post the entries. So all this is needed to have great financials and accurate regulatory reporting, because inaccurate MCRFC, more acronyms, MCR, Mortgage Call Report, that's what they say
right.
on the report, the NMLS, Nationwide Mortgage Licensing System, Mortgage Call Report, MCR, financial condition, inaccurate MCRFC can put you out of business. The report can look correct, but it could be the wolf in sheep's clothing that could put you out of business. You've got to be careful. You've got to get it right. So we've got to kill the wolf, Dave. We've got to kill the wolf. We've got to get a gun, or we got to set a trap and catch it and ship it off to Alaska, or better yet, how about let's go back through every loan that's been closed for 2011 and make sure your interim interest is correct. Make sure your payroll reporting by category is correct so you'll pass regulatory exam. The only way to be safe from the wolf is to protect yourself with loan-level procedures that captures the data correctly the first time, so accounting records the data correctly every time. So are you currently capturing all the details from the closing statement into the accounting system? You know, our experience has been in talking to companies around the country is that they're not, and I hate to say this, but Dave, but the reality is if you're not, then your call report will likely be wrong, and filing an incorrect report is considered not filed, could lead to a suspension. Filing a report with known inaccuracy is fraud. That's license termination and MARI findings. It's
Ow.
Just don't go there. Just get it right the first time. And here's an important point. Now, just because your CPA says your financials are not materially misstated, so just because your CPA signs off on your report does not mean that they are accurate enough for regulatory reporting. That's a really important point. Just because the CPA says your financials, in their opinion, are not materially misstated does not mean they're accurate enough. A CPA does not look at every transaction. Thus, in this case, the wolf of inaccurate details must be monitored closely. And just because you've got great-looking financials doesn't mean they're right. They could be wrong. Just because something looks good on the outside doesn't mean the core of it is accurate or clean or what you're expecting. Don't be deceived. Be careful. Be accurate. Challenge the details and make sure that you're right. So now, as I wrap up my section, I'm looking to see if the producer is starting to flash at me yet.
He's giving you a little more time here. Well,
yeah. So here, I'm going to wrap up real quick, and I'm going to wrap up by doing something really, really creative, Dave. I'm going to take the word wolf, and I'm going to take the W as the first letter, and I'm going to change it to be a G. So if you take wolf and change the W to be a G, what do you got? You got golf.
You got golf.
Golf.
And
so we're going to convert our wolf to be a golf, because that's more fun to end with.
Yeah, okay. So
here's the keys to success in life, generally speaking. Now, my high school golf coach told me there were four keys to success in golf and in life. Number one, play to your strength. Do what you're good at.
Good point.
Get help with the things that you're not good at. Number two, walk the course and plan your path. Know where you're going to go before you get there and have a plan B just in case you hit into the rough. Have a business plan that identifies contingencies. You know where you're going to go. Number three, avoid the hazards. Play smart. Don't take unknown risks. Understand all the contracts before you sign them. You know, some of these correspondent agreements can have overly aggressive EPD provisions. And number four, lastly but certainly not least, listen to your caddy. Listen to your board of directors. Listen to your advisors. You can't know everything. It's impossible to know everything.
Great advice.
Get help from others who have been around. And Dave, That's the profit doctor.
Yeah, my golf coach pulled me aside and said, Dave, play to your strength. Go play softball. He didn't particularly appreciate it. He didn't see my talent out there. And so I would walk the call course, and he told me, just go drown yourself in that one hazard out there. So I followed at least three of these steps, and we played in a poor community, so we didn't have a golf caddy. Good stuff, Andy. That's good.
Well, I played at Makaha International in Manoa, Hawaii.
Oh, so you're going to bring up how you play golf in Hawaii. It's time to end this segment. I appreciate it so much. We're going to be getting more into the call report in the next segment. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending. It's, again, the radio show created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals to keep you updated on all that's going on. You know, a lot of people ask me, why did you start this? This is really good. What inspired you? You know, a lot of it is trying to stay on top of all the things that are going on. But what most valuable and what I was most searching for is what we're going to be doing in this next segment. I want to find industry leaders, and I am so privileged to have as regular guests industry leaders on this program, starting with Alice Alvey, Joe Farr, and Andy Schell, and bring them into an environment where weekly, not just once a year at a conference, bring them together weekly to discuss what is going on in the industry. That's what inspired me to start this program, and it's obviously having great success because we have listeners from all over the U.S. listening to us, a lot downloading the program, listening to us while they're working out. We appreciate you doing that each and every week, and we appreciate you telling your associates about it and others in the industry. Help us expand this our listening audience by telling others about it. So one of the things that I always ask for feedback, some of the feedback I get is this. Dave, I just love it when the four of you sit around and do the fireside chat thing. You just take topics of what's going on in the industry, and we get to listen to you dialogue on it. That is so valuable. Love having the guests. Great. Always good to have informative and informative guests, and such as we've had recently. A lot of feedback on last week's broadcast on recruiting, the do's and don'ts, the legal risks there. But they want to hear from us, and you, the listeners, want to hear from us. So that's what we're going to get in today. I'm going to ask each one of our regulars to bring out at least one topic that they think is most significant that's in the end that we should have on the radar screen. And let's get started with Alice Alvey. So, Alice, what is the single biggest issue that you think is out there? And I know you track so many, and any one of them in any week can become the latest, hottest, greatest thing. But what would you say right now, based on what you see, what is the hottest single issue that you think we need to be looking at when it comes to regulation?
Well, Dave, I'm going to, when it comes to the industry, I'm going to think at the loan officer, processor, underwriter, operations level for the team, because I know Joe and you guys are going to cover some other. I'm going to cover at that level. And for this group right now, it's underwriting and the products we're faced with. So you can combine that with FHA and the increase in the monthly mortgage insurance premiums and the fact that we have a potential to hopefully see that the actuarial numbers that will be coming out hopefully in the next month or so show us that, you know, perhaps we can get a change in that and not an increase. I mean, operationally, we're just dealing with trying to get borrowers qualified. So
yeah.
When this HARP news comes out, and you say, this is really great product, but then it's just a press release. You get some details from the webinar, which we attended last week and we reported on last week. But then how do you, if you're an originator today, how do you answer your customers' questions today?
Exactly.
Do I qualify, and when can I get a HARP loan with no appraisal at 165% loan to value? So I think that's one of our challenges today.
I think that is a legitimate challenge. I was talking to one borrower who says, well, I was planning to refinance, but when they announced that program, I'm going to hold off. And I go, and I'm not sure you want to do that. If you got a great rate now, jump all over it. And then, but it's free. And so it did have one impact out of that now. So it was a lot of people that are thinking about refinancing just says, put my application on hold. I'm going to hang on. But let's get into looking at some of the issues related to what they proposed. You said it was like a press release, and which implied that not all the details were thought out, kind of a half-baked cake.
Right. Who out there is going, you know, first of all, everybody sits and holds their breath and says, well, I don't, you know, I sell all my loans to B of A, Wells, City, and Chase, and I have to know what they're going to do before I can even start to make a move. Although companies certainly are rearranging, you know, their shops to not be so bound necessarily by just one or a couple of those entities. But, you know, how do you manage all your business, and who actually wants to take 160% loan to value? So, Joe, you know, what are your thoughts? Where am I going to sell, you know, a loan with a super high LTV under the new HARP program? What are the consequences?
Even without significant reps and warranties, I think there's still going to be issues. I did read where the big banks are going to participate in HARP, but it didn't say if they were going to do so on the wholesaler correspondent side.
Right.
Or maybe just on retail. But, you know, when you are counting on the property as collateral in any way, and you have 175% LTV, you got to ask yourself who along the way is going to object to that. And, you know, it may be at the very beginning. Well, number one, management of the company, the owners of the company might say, you know, even though I have limited reps and warranties, I still may not want to count on ever having a have to buy back a loan where it's already worth half of what I invested in it. But two, think about the warehouse banks. Are they going to be happy
lending
money at if it's 98% of loan value, that's like at 170% LTV. I haven't heard if any warehouse banks have come out with an answer to that question. Have any of you?
Yeah, Andy?
I haven't. I actually haven't heard specifically from the lenders their perspective on this, but like we were talking at the pre-show, a lot of times the lenders are looking to the takeout as the solution to their payoff. So, and Joe, as we were talking earlier, a lot of times these lenders are first looking to the takeout to pay off their loan. Secondarily, they'll look to the company itself to take it out. Third, they'll look to the guarantor to pay off the loan. And then lastly, they'll look to the collateral, which in this case, obviously, would be insufficient. So they still have three of the four primary mitigants available to them, with the most significant obviously being the takeout from the primary investor. So while it does sound pretty scary to me to have a warehouse loan at 170% LTV, you're still relying on the reps from the investor relying on the counterparty from the investor to do what they said they were going to do and buy the loan.
Yes, they're going to be like hot potatoes, I think. You know, if I was a mid-sized lender, I'm going to get this thing off my line as fast as possible.
Yes, it's just got risk written all over it. Absolutely. And these loans are going to be, while they are not requiring a collateral review, there is an automated model run on them, an AVM.
And from some point you have to determine what your risk is, right? So the depositories have to be able to measure what are my risks on these loans, and the default risks, the repayment risk, is all tied in a lot of respects to loan to value.
Well, and you have to make sure it's higher than 80%, because if you have less than 80% LTV, you don't get to take advantage of this.
Right.
Well,
what if the warehouse line lender's lending policy says the maximum LTV is 100%? So even if there is a firm takeout, they still can't make the loan. So there's a lot of details to work through.
Well, I want to make sure we characterize this in the proper way. The folks at FHFA are doing their best to come up with a solution to the housing crisis that's out there and so many homes underwater. I mean, I applaud many of them for their efforts to try to do something. And certainly something as complex as this has got the unintended consequences. And you just got to know. They're sitting around, they're going, you know what, we hadn't thought about it. Warehouse capacity is one of them. Talking about, with the advance rate on these loans is one that you sit and wonder if that's gotten all the way thought out. But, Alice, let's come back to one thing. DU and LP, there's been some developments as to when that's going to be ready to go. Could you give our listeners an update as to when DU and LP will be able to handle or be reprogrammed to handle these loans?
Well, Fannie and Freddie always come out with a manual component to all their products. But unfortunately, if you're someone who has to sell to an aggregator, you're usually left with that the loan has to be sitting with a DU or LP approval. And on the conference call that was held last week, Fannie Mae announced, and everything I'm reading still today is confirming, that the ability for the system to properly analyze this higher LTV and give you the reps and warranties protection, the system's not going to be programmed till the first part of next year. So we are anxiously awaiting to see what's put together on November 15th or around that date. We're supposed to be getting some kind of announcement that gives us some more details, and then we'll be able to move forward a little bit better at that point. But, right now it looks like if I'm an originator, all I'm doing is fielding phone calls going, not yet. Let's try FHA, or let's see where else you stand. But if you're underwater, this is really the only game in town.
Well, we're going to be talking more about that as in future programs. Stay tuned on that. But let's move to the next topic. Joe, secondary markets, a lot of concern. You'd report on what's going on as far as relates to the rates and indirectly on what's going on in the secondary markets. What do you see as the most significant issue? I already know what the answer is, but go ahead.
Well, it's what's going to happen to Fannie and Freddie. And this Garrett proposal is – it's going to happen. Something's got to happen, given the current state of their entity. But here's a good summary of what's trying to be done here, and it's to reform the secondary market to ensure robust private investment in mortgages in the mortgage market without government guarantee. All right. So the key element there is without government guarantee. At the end, somewhere, the expectation is to get that done with. What that brings into is many, many questions regarding things like consistency and ease of selling those that we put into mortgage-backed securities. And this bill, apparently, or this plan anyway, has some very good elements to it, which I'll talk about, but it also has some issues that I'd like to bring up as well. The things that I like, and Alice mentioned this early, is that they are trying to retain one of the very best aspects of Fannie and Freddie, and that's consistency. They have created guidelines, uniformity of guidelines, uniformity of documents, legal instruments. So that is such a great standard, great option to have, and they're trying to retain that. They are trying. They're going to abolish the Dodd-Frank. The risk retention provisions of Dodd-Frank, which I think is good as well. In addition, Dave, one piece that I like is that they're hoping to extend the standardization to some of the servicing aspects of things, which being in the servicing world pre-Fannie Freddie, we were dealing with servicing guidelines that differed by investor. And that just is not a very efficient thing to do. So it'd be great if that comes out of it as well. One little point of commentary I'd like to throw in here. There is a bullet point describing in the law and legal certainty section that Alice talked about that says that in this law they hope to prevent regulators from unilaterally forcing investors to reduce the principal on the loans they've invested in. Now, what does that say? I mean, it's saying that we are in an environment where the regulator can tell the property owner that he has to give up his property.
Yeah.
It is really a sad commentary, but that's just my commentary. Yeah.
Let's Good commentary. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that the thing that is difficult about this, and it's going to be difficult in the post Fannie and Freddie environment, is how to settle loans, how to get them from the originator to the security holder. One of the provisions in this transparency section says that they hope to ensure investors have sufficient time to review and analyze the disclosed information before making an investment decision. Now, think about what that throws into the mix. It throws in time, and it throws in uncertainty.
Yep.
You know, the time can be very difficult. The uncertainty can have huge impacts on things that we do today that we might not be able to do in the future. Like, think about the warehouse lenders. I know we talked about warehouse lenders on the HARP deal.
Well,
warehouse lenders like to have that certainty and like to know when the things are going to be taken out. It also throws in things like how do you cover your risk? It seems to prevent the TBA market if you don't have a certain settlement day and if you don't have an ability to be certain that the trade's going to happen. How do you cover your risk? How do you offer a lock to a borrower before the loan closes?
Do you think, Joe, that they're thinking more along the line of maybe developing some better standardizations that the warranties have to be there? Not that it's necessarily on all individual trades, but that maybe they can come up with, here's a set of standards so that it isn't automatic. In other words, the investors reviewed, you know, a prospectus or whatever ahead of time. Do you read this as being on an individual loan basis?
I really do, because they're talking about providing more information on the loans. And an investor that's taken the credit risk, because there's no government guarantee anymore, is going to have a different opinion about properties or securities that are full of properties in Texas versus Florida or you know, wherever or whatever, the size of the properties, the mix of the properties. And each security is going to be different in that regard. And if they're giving them time to analyze that could take some time.
Well, the last bullet in there talks about creating an individualized marker. And actually, there was another article written by that was in National Mortgage News, and where they talked also about some of these standardizations that they're developing systems on that back end to actually almost like the equivalent of a DU run. You know, only this is more about markers that would concern investors, so that it to maybe facilitate speeding up that process.
Well, it may become a short process, but it's still going to be one that it's an uncertain process. As of right now, if you make a Fannie Freddie eligible loan, those who are counting on that loan to be purchased are pretty certain.
Well, and you're right, Joe, there is some uncertainty in there, but the first point in that Section 3 is they want to increase the quality of loan-level information. And while there is a bunch of other stuff in here that's some degree of concern, I think that's ultimately a good thing. To have loan-level information that's increasing the quality so it's accurate and complete, because we've been really bad at doing that over the historically as an industry.
No,
isn't there still enforcement in that? I mean, they were supposed to be disclosing accurately before.
Well, let's get on. I'm looking at the clock. I want to get through all the other topics. Andy Schell, this is good stuff. I mean, by the way, it's Representative Scott Garrett that published the reform secondary marketing, the second mortgage market, and you can read about it by going to http://garrett.house.gov/news/document-single.aspx?ASPX?Document ID equals 266462. Now, I do that because people are downloading this and listening to this, and they'll rewind and go back or grab it. You can go read it. There's a lot of great information.
Or send an email to me, and I'll forward you the link, or email Dave, and we'll send you the link.
Or email any of us. You know what? We'll put it up on the LinkedIn discussion group so you guys can pull
there
it down
go.
From there. The thing I put in red letters on this one is, in the absence of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, there just seems to be more and more momentum about eliminating these two organizations. That's the scary part to me. But at least there's some encouraging things that Joe brought out. Standardization, transparency, but also a lot of other issues. But let's jump over to Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. Andy, you recently, or this past week, did a campus MBA webinar
on the topic of the call report. Are there any insights? What did you glean out of that? Is everyone getting this and what's going on? Or do we have problems in River City here, bud?
Well, I hate to ring the bell too loudly, but this past week, I and Teresa, the COO of our company, gave this presentation on the call report. And, you know, at the end of the presentation, there was a series of questions and a poll question about people's understanding of certain aspects of what we're talking about. And what I'm concerned about, what I think is happening, is that the whole process of capturing loan-level detail means that the accounting system has to capture all the information off the HUD-1, as well as then track the sale of the loan, gain on sale, and a bunch of other stuff. And I think what's happening is that the complexity of financial management within mortgage banking has expanded faster. The complexity has increased greater than our ability as an industry to keep pace. And so what's ended up happening is that we've got accounting clerks, not even bookkeepers, trying to do accounting work that requires a degree in accounting to do it, or maybe even a CPA. So what we're seeing is that things that are actually basic in accounting are being misunderstood or not understood at all, much less the more complex aspects like hedge accounting and mark-to-market accounting, which are also landing squarely on mortgage banks, because the mortgage banker has been in the past, you know, production-driven, make more loans, get them closed, watch the bank account, without really regard for all this accounting detail. And with the call report and the requirement for loan-level accounting in order to properly prepare the accounting report, and with a lack of understanding about what that means and how it works, I think we have great big problems in River City, Dave. I think there's a big, big ticking time bomb that's going to blow up all over mortgage banking because we don't know how to do this well enough, and we've got to have greater sophistication in our accounting function, or we're going to be in big trouble.
Well, I think that's what I want to bring up for our listeners to listen to. I mean, the fact that you're doing this and you're getting a large percent of the audience basically indicating some way or another through the way they can post questions, and that the perceptions they're not getting it. And that's exactly what I'm getting across the country. Alice, Joe, jump in here. Is a lot of people are just, we have always been weak in the area of accounting, but this call report is going to shine a light on it. It's exposing one of the weaknesses. And one of the things that worries me about that, Alice, is do we need to have any more weaknesses exposed about our industry? I mean, if it is weak, we need to get it fixed. But if it's exposing it, then what comes with exposing of a risk or more regulation, Alice? And that's really what kind of worries me a bit about this. Jump in.
Well, one of the things I know I see, and Andy, I'm sure you see it as well, is when you try and raise the subject about that your accounting might be inaccurate, their first response is, no, I'm sure it's fine.
Yep.
You know, I mean,
I'm sure
it's fine because I'm getting my paycheck and my staff's getting their check. And, you know, so far the IRS hasn't written me up for anything. And so I must be okay. Well, this is a different set of eyes that's now getting to a newer, more, like you said, more exposed level of information that, and they are knowledgeable on mortgage accounting. And they're going to be looking at a more loan level set of data that you, like Andy's saying, is I don't think people really account for it the way that they need to for this level of reporting.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people are accounting for things on a cash basis, where what happens at a particular point in time doesn't matter. It's because I'm going to make this loan, I'm going to sell it in a very short period of time. Why do I care what happens in between?
Yeah, somebody going to write me up for something I only held for 60 or 90 days.
Well, for 6 or 7 days, you know, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the answer is obviously that yes, because if you don't capture interim interest on the loan held for sale, even if it is for 2 days, your reports are still going to be wrong.
Well, and Andy, one of the other issues I've heard you talk about is the need to know on a location level, right? I mean, you got to know what's going on in that branch. And without loan-level accounting, how do you do that?
Exactly. You ought to be able, if you're doing this right, doing loan-level accounting right, you should know profit by branch, profit by product, profit by region, profit by originator. You'll know that stuff, and your business will be much more effectively managed because you'll actually be able to see the details of what's going on within your organization. Short of that, you're just guessing. But if you do that, then you can comply with a call report and run your business better. There's all kinds of reasons why to do this. It's just it's not going to be Billy Bob, the bookkeeper, down in the basement doing this anymore. It's going to have to take a greater degree of sophistication to do some of this right. Some of it just means training, and we're doing that more. And Alice has a great system for doing that, and we may be working with Alice to do some of that. But people need training. We're doing it with a campus MBA as well. People need training on how to do this. It's not intuitive initially, and it's not simple. I did a training class for a CPA on loan-level accounting, and after he had originally scheduled for an hour, and after 2 hours, we hadn't even gotten to the hard part yet, and he was going, "Boy, I got to call you back. My head's spinning. I got to think about this a little bit more." And that was just the process of posting the closing entry and the sale entry. We hadn't even gotten into hedging and mark-to-market. So it's complicated. It's more complicated than we've ever dealt with before, and we're going to have to step up and do it right, or really bad things are going to happen to our organizations.
Bad things is when you have a regulator coming through that door, folks, and talking to you. It's one of the areas, one of the things we do in this program. We try to bring to you each and every week what you should be considering. And there's not, I put a bright red line around this area. If you're ignoring it, or just like Alice says, yeah, we're fine. We're fine. That's such a common response. Yeah, we're fine. Why do you think you're fine? Anyway, we could go on and on about all of that. But looking at the calendar and look at the clock, what we have here in a few minutes, one of the things I just want to add to the discussion, I've been writing, as everyone knows, many of you are following this program and following what I write, I'm writing on leadership. I think it single-handedly represents the greatest challenge to this industry and, quite frankly, to our country. We have a leadership problem. It's a leadership crisis. I wrote about it in a blog. I'm writing about it each and every week in National Mortgage Professional. It is without question one of the biggest issues. And Joe asked a great question as we were getting ready for the radio program. Is it at the highest levels? And yes, it is there, and which means we're encouraging David Stevens. I'm encouraged the fact that David Stevens is there. He has the potential of doing some marvelous things for the NBA and for our association. But he has many forces that are there, conflicting forces working there. So we just got to continue to encourage David to step out there. One of the guys I want to say that I want to put a highlight around, I believe there is so much potential, so much leadership in guys like Ed DeMarco. I am so impressed with what I'm seeing him try to do for our industry. He's a leader. And the more I study leadership, the more I write about it, I believe that is one guy, and there's many walking among us, but that's one guy that's starting to hit my radar screen as a potential really strong leader for our industry. So I'm not sure about all that, but Alice and Joe and Andy, you want to jump in on any thoughts on the leadership issue?
Well, just real quick, Dave, I want to give people a reference point because you've been writing articles, I don't know, a series of 7 or 8 or maybe 12 articles on leadership that's available for people to take a look at. So if they haven't read them, they really should, and that's at the Mortgage Professional magazine. So go there and download them if you haven't read them yet because they're very, very well done.
We try to help everybody start focusing on it. It's really a journey because I'm studying it myself. I think the biggest problem is we need new leaders. And the solution is simple, as I'm writing an article right now, I'm sending to the publisher. The solution is simple. Throw out the bad leaders, hire good leaders. The question
is... One thing you want to hit on just real quickly is one of the things you talk about is you talk about character and the void of character that's been in some of the leadership roles. And maybe just take a minute, if we've got it, to hit on character, if you would, please.
Well, character is the thing that is at the heart of every person that causes you to make a decision. It's like the core processor is what I'm writing about. And it's why do you make the decision to go right or left when you face a decision? It comes down to character. And there is a real clear, simple right and wrong in much of what we do. So character is driven by, you know, that which is probably the key cornerstone of leadership. And that's one of the things I write about and talk about. Going to be doing that again. The key cornerstone in leadership and a good leader is good character. If you don't have good character, everything else, all the other characteristics you could have that make a good leader causes for some problems. We appreciate you tuning in and listening to us. I'm not sure if I answered the question, Andy, but they can read the article. We'll send up, I'll put up a link to it and all the other articles on it. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week. I want to thank our producer, Andy Alvey, who keeps us on time, keeps us focused and tuned up here. He does a great job. Also, Alice Alvey out there in Detroit for contributing so much to each program. Joe Farr Yeah, same to you and Prophet Doctor. We appreciate all four of you guys contributing what you do. And we thank you so much for tuning in. Remember to tell others about it. Head over to our new blog at LinkedIn. It's called Lickin' on Lending Blog and a Discussion Group. Appreciate you posting your comments. We want to hear from you. Folks, have a great week. Happy Halloween. And we'll be broadcasting next week from the AmeriCatalyst event in Austin, Texas. And we'll bring you some reports. Stay tuned. Got great great interviews from there. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.